When you think of agriculture in western Wisconsin, what do you imagine? For most of us, I would assume we picture fields of corn, soybeans, acres of dairy cows. So what would you say if I said there are farms growing trout, Atlantic salmon, even shrimp in our region? Today on the West Side, we'll learn a little bit about the fascinating world of aquaculture in Dairyland and the U.S. as a whole. That's this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. I hope you had a good 4th of July week, extended weekend. Joining me in studio are three men on the front lines of aquaculture in Wisconsin. First, joining us in our studios, or from our studios in Wausau, I'd like to welcome Chris Hartlib. Chris is a professor of biology at UW Stevens Point. He is also the director of the university's Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility near Bayfield. Chris Hartlib, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you for being with us. And joining me in studio here in Eau Claire, I would first like to welcome Jeremiah Fredrickson. He is the new owner of the Bullfrog Fish Farm and Eat My Fish company near Menominee. Jeremiah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations, by the way, on the
purchase.
Appreciate
that.
And also joining me is Mike Hobley. He is the owner of Bohemian Ocean Shrimp and Bohemian Ovens Bakery in Bloomer. Mike, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we would like you to be part of the conversation as well. Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment. We're talking about fish farming. Also, the proper term is known as aquaculture because we're not just talking about fish, as we can tell by Mike's presence here. So if you have questions about what it is, where it is, how we rank as a state, if you want to beat me to some of the questions that I've got written down, let us know, 1-800-228-5615. You can also post a question on our Westside Facebook page, and I will do my best to get it on the air as quick as possible. So with that, I want to kind of go over some of the basics and talk about what aquaculture is. And for that, I think Chris Hartlib will be our best bet. So in a nutshell, what is aquaculture, Chris?
Well, aquaculture is fish farming, as you've mentioned, which is a form of agriculture. What most people don't realize is that more than 50% of the seafood we eat in the U.S. actually comes from fish farms. Simply put, there are no more fish in the sea, so it's becoming increasingly difficult to get them from the oceans. So instead, farmers are stepping in, and they're farming the fish all throughout the country and right here in Wisconsin.
When you say there are no more fish in the sea, that sounds pretty dire. What do you mean by that?
Sure. For the past 20 years, the amount of fish that we're harvesting out of the ocean hasn't changed. Yet the demand for seafood continues to increase. If you can't get the fish from the ocean, then you have to get it somewhere else, and that somewhere else is from fish farms.
And was there a point, a certain date or a certain year or general time when we reached that threshold of demand exceeding production, natural production?
Sure. It was about 20 years ago. And the fact is that, as everybody kind of knows, you know, the human population on Earth just continues to grow, and therefore so does the need for protein. But we just can't – there just aren't any more fish in the ocean to keep, you know, meeting that increasing demand. So farmers have to step in and actually produce that amount that but we want here in the U.S. and also abroad.
And it's nothing new in general, but when we go to the grocery store and we see that the frozen types of fish, you know, fish sticks, whatever, but also the fillets of salmon and whatnot, what percentage of those are farm-raised versus wild-caught, in your best guess?
Best guess would be somewhere between 50 to 55% come from fish farms.
Hmm.
Most stores, you know, will actually label the food, and they'll label it as farm-raised or wild-caught, so that you can tell the difference.
All right. So how long has it been around in the U.S., in fish farming in general? Because I know that we have up near Spooner and up in Hayward, there are fish hatcheries that the DNR has run for 100 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, nationwide, if you want to look at it, fish farming's been around since the colonial days. Immigrants basically brought over with them the fish that they wanted to raise that they were familiar with over in Europe. But in terms of Wisconsin, I think the first Wisconsin fish farm was founded in the late 1800s. And up till now, I think the latest stats basically show that there's about 2,800 registered fish farms in the state. Though, if you look at the size of them, I would say that about 130 of them are actually kind of like your commercial producers.
Right, right. And that kind of struck me because even on the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection's website, it said that of those fish farms, most of them are listed as fish farms and aquaculture facilities. Most are just people's, basically, their ponds in their yards or some kind of a hobby?
Yeah, I mean, it, basically in the state, the Department of Agriculture regulates it, and they say that if you're going to add or remove fish from a pond, even if it's just a pond on your own property, that you have to be registered as a fish farm. So then they have three classifications, and you can almost say the first is like a hobby farm. Then you get into commercial, and then even larger, where you're going to stock into the waters of the state. So that's why the number kind of reduces the higher you go. And like I said, about 130 of them are actually in the state producing fish that they sell for food or stocking or as bait fish.
And do you have a breakdown for among those 130 farms that are actually operating as businesses, what percentage are for food and what percentage are for, say, bait fish?
The majority are for food fish. Bait fish, there's probably more in the range of maybe a dozen or two in the state that produce bait fish. But that, even though it's a small number of farms, basically Wisconsin is the number two bait fish producer in the nation.
Right, right. And how do we rank for producing food for our fish for the dinner plate?
Well, it all depends on the scale. So if you're looking nationwide, we ranked about 20th among the 50 states for food fish production, but we ranked number one in the Midwest.
Okay. And as far as states producing fish for food, you and I talked because I did a story about a facility in Jackson County and just started kind of peeling back the layers of the aquaculture industry in the state. But I was surprised to find, and I shouldn't have been, I guess, that some of the southern states are big time fish producers for as far as the contiguous states.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that and say, why are we number 20 in the nation? First, you have to look at, like you said, the southern states, the Mississippi, Arkansas, Alabama, where they produce catfish. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, catfish has been kind of the king of farmed fish in the U.S. Then you have to swing over to the West Coast, where you have a lot of the Pacific salmon producers that grow the salmon and trout that people like. So that's where you kind of get numbers 1 through 19 are in the southern and then western part of the U.S. So then you kind of swing back to the Midwest, and that's where Wisconsin comes in, where they produce rainbow trout, they produce walleye, as well as yellow perch and sunfish. And then, of course, there's some more of the niche market ones, which we'll have some people talking about shrimp production as well.
Yeah, yeah. And with Wisconsin, as far as food production, for fish for food production, is there a king fish, like one that's prized or one that seems to be more in demand than others?
Well, the number one fish raised in Wisconsin is rainbow trout.
Sure.
And then behind that, then you kind of get into more of the walleye and the perch, as well as the sunfish. Some more of the common fish, the ones that people like to catch when they go angling in the state, is also tends to be the ones that they like to purchase if they're buying seafood.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question about fish farming and aquaculture in western Wisconsin. We're joined by two gentlemen who have a fish and a shrimp farm, respectively, in western Wisconsin. Also joining us is Chris Hartlib, who is one of the state's, I would say one of the state's experts on the aquaculture industry. If you've got a question or comment, 1-800-228-5615. With regards to the state's aquaculture industry, is there any change happening? Because I did a story about this, Superior Fresh. It's a facility in Jackson County. It's totally indoors. It's a recirculating system, and it seemed pretty high-tech. And I'm just wondering if there is any kind of change either in the types of farms that are being constructed or the people that are getting involved. Has there been any kind of shift, any kind of growth in this industry?
Well, what I could say is that there's been a shift or a change in the past 3 years in a couple of areas. You were mentioning one with Superior Fresh, and that is that there's a growing interest in aquaponics. And aquaponics differs from aquaculture in that you're not just raising the fish, but now you're also raising vegetable crops in the water as well. And people really like that concept because you get to raise an entire meal right there on your farm from your vegetables to your protein. Plus, it's a very sustainable form of agriculture because the water just recycles within the system. So that's one area we've seen kind of progress in new types of production systems, new types of seafood being raised. And then, of course, one of the big changes was recently a new law passed that kind of puts aquaculture directly in Wisconsin's agriculture fields, which kind of just levels the playing field for Wisconsin fish farmers that they're now considered farmers.
Right. I want to get into that more in depth in just a bit. We have our first caller of the broadcast, and I'm going to go straight to Beverly in Chautauqua. Beverly, I got you on the air. What's
Hi.
On your mind? Hi. Thanks for calling. Beverly, if you could turn your radio down a little bit, what's your question?
My question is I'm interested in the trout, of course, and the shrimp, and we do know Mike very well from Bohemian Ovens in Bloomer. And can we go and actually purchase the fish and trout from their businesses?
That's a great question. Say, Mike Hobley, let's go to you first. Can we get your shrimp, and how do we get our hands on it?
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mike. There you are.
When I have them, they are available. You can buy them at the farm, or we have sold them through the farmer's market or right at my restaurant bakery. But at the present, I've had difficulty with raising them as of late, and so I do not have any at this time. My next crop should be available at the end of August. So.
Oh, not until then.
Yeah.
So would we give you our name and number,
Will you take an order right now?
Will I take an order right now? Call me at the bakery. I'll take an order. How's that?
Sure, I will.
Yeah.
All right. And how about Jeremiah Fredrickson? I mean, you just recently took ownership of the Bullfrog Fish Farm, but it was pretty well established. People know the name.
Yeah, and we're continuing a lot of the same traditions that Herbie had established. And as far as if you want to find our fish, you can find it in a number of the grocery stores in Eau Claire and Menominee. But you can also come down to the farm. We're open on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to the public and by appointment. So stop in or give us a call or follow us on our website or on Facebook.
Very cool. Beverly, thanks so much for that question, or for the general question. Let's take our first break. When we get back, I want to talk more in depth with Mike Hobley and with Jeremiah Fredrickson about their operations, the shrimp farm and the trout farm. 1-800-228-5615. Keep those questions and calls coming. We have wide open phone lines, and we'd love to hear from you. This is the West Side. We're talking about aquaculture in western Wisconsin and the state as a whole. I am joined by Mike Hobley. He is the owner of Bohemian Ocean Shrimp and the Bohemian Ovens Bakery in Bloomer. Jeremiah Fredrickson is the new owner of Bullfrog Fish Farm and Eat My Fish near Menominee. And Chris Hartlib is a professor of biology and aquaculture expert at UW Stevens Point. This is the West Side. We'll be right back.
Support for WPR comes from the International Wisconsin Ginseng Festival, September 15th to the 17th in Wausau. Demonstrations, tours, and family activities, all celebrating Wisconsin ginseng. WisconsinGinsengFestival.com. Support also comes from UW Eau Claire Continuing Education, offering a master's in professional development through education studies. One Saturday a month, the rest is online. uwec.ly/MEPD.
Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning us in on Ideas 88.3 WHWC, Menominee Eau Claire, and Ideas 88.7 WRFW in River Falls. We're talking about aquaculture, that is fish farming and farming other underwater creatures in western Wisconsin. I'm joined by Mike Hobley. He's a shrimp farmer in Bloomer, also a baker. Jeremiah Fredrickson is the new owner of a fish farm near Menominee, well-known Bullfrog Fish Farm. And Chris Hartlib is a professor of biology at UW Stevens Point. If you've got a question, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-228-5615. You can also post on the Westside Facebook page if the lines are full. With that, I want to go to you, Mike Hobley, and tell me a little bit about Bohemian Ocean Shrimp. When you got into it, how, why?
Okay, about 3 years ago, after having studied the shrimp business for quite a few years, I discovered a fellow in Westby, Wisconsin that was raising shrimp.
Right.
And my wife and I went down, took a visit, paid him the fee to look at his stuff, and decided that, this looks like this could work. I have an old barn. I was a dairy farmer for 27 years before I was in the bakery business. And April of that of 3 years ago, I started converting my old dairy barn into a shrimp facility. And so it's 160 feet long. I converted 60 feet of it, tore out the stanchions, and I have 8 swimming pools, just your average farm and fleet
swimming pool. Above ground?
Yeah, 14, 15, 12-foot pools. I have 8 of them. And I'm growing saltwater shrimp in there. The way it works is you purchase what they call PLs, post-larval shrimp, from a hatchery in Isamadora, Florida.
What do they look like?
Okay, they're about the size of an eyelash.
Oh.
So they ship them in a overnight FedEx in a styrofoam box in 2 bags of water, and you have 15,000 shrimp in each bag, and I put them in a what I call a nursery pool. And this nursery pool is supplied with oxygen via air stones and air hoses.
Like a fish tank kind of a thing.
Yep. 12-foot pool. So 15,000 shrimp go in there for about a month. You begin by feeding them a liquid diet. I feed them 5 times a day. And after a week or so, they're already an inch long.
Hmm.
And over the course of time, you shift to ever a little bit larger feed. And theoretically, 125 days later, you have a salable crop. I think that's a little bit short. It probably is more like 150 days or so.
Sure.
But that depends a little bit on the temperature of your water. So I use wood heat to keep the barn at 94 or 95 degrees year-round.
Wow.
And there's no water exchange. We use the BioFlox system where bacteria and protozoa and various other little living elements process the waste products that the shrimp give off, and they eventually remake it into actually food that the shrimp can eat. So there are tiny little flocks in the water, little brown flocks, and they control, if everything is balanced properly and there's no sediment on the bottom, they make it all work. However, I have had difficulty because there's always water evaporation. And so in the last year, about Christmas time of last year, they all died on me.
Oh, my.
And, well, practically all of them. I was able to harvest out of a couple pools. But what it was determined was is that my water has a lot of copper in it.
Oh, naturally.
Naturally occurring copper. And this, as the water evaporates and you add more water, you concentrate the heavy metals. So
sure.
Zinc and copper and cadmium are quite deadly to shrimp. And I discovered that I had like 20 parts per million shrimp of copper in there, and 5 parts per million is deadly.
No so, kidding.
So now I'm restarting again, and this time I'm using an ion exchange filter to remove the copper and the zinc that might be in there in the groundwater that I use. So I've got a new crop growing, and they seem to be doing just fine. But there are many challenges in the business. I guess the saying in the shrimp business is if you haven't killed a million shrimp, you haven't been doing things.
Oh, my.
So it's a not a cookie-cutter operation. You have to check for oxygen levels.
Sure.
You know, I have 2 pumps, air pumps, so I have a backup If the electricity goes off for 35 minutes, their shrimp are dead. So I have a generator that will back up that and backup pump and all kinds of redundant systems to make it all work. But I should be able to grow four crops of shrimp a year. You can overlap. You have the babies come in. And while you're growing large ones, and so you move them from the nursery pools to the grow-out pools. And
the idea is to have a constant kind of harvest.
Yep. So is there a book about it? Not a good one yet.
That's the thing. I read in one of the articles, I think it was Volume 1, first alerted me to the fact that there's a shrimp farm up in Bloomer.
Yeah.
Said you mentioned the 900-page book in it. I was wondering if it was that simple.
Well,
that was one of my questions.
This has a lot of technical information in it and diseases and all kinds of things, but not very much about this new system.
Sure.
This BioFlock system. And in fact, 75% of the shrimp that you purchase in the store are farm-raised.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second biggest, shrimp are the second biggest import into the United States following oil. $22 billion a year of shrimp are imported in this country, plus there's a lot of domestic stuff. So.
And I did read that in terms of, America, I saw an article saying that Americans are eating more seafood.
Yep.
Number one is shrimp.
Yeah. Think about the city of Las Vegas. They eat 60,000 pounds of shrimp a day.
Wow. So I want to, before we've got a bunch of calls coming in, which is fantastic, but I wanted to ask, just in a nutshell, what's more difficult, raising shrimp or raising dairy cows?
Oh.
Or is it apples and oranges or cows and shrimp?
You can have, if you have livestock, you can have dead stock. This is completely different. You do have to have a fair amount of knowledge about biology and chemistry.
Sure.
And so both of them are balancing acts, but this is a little bit more intricate. You can turn your cows out on pasture and they'll do pretty fine.
Yeah.
I have to weigh my feed out every day. Once a week I take the shrimp out and I weigh them to see how much they've grown. And so I adjust my feed levels every week.
Oh.
And I had all kinds of crazy ideas. I have a worm farm that I built that I was going to take the waste products from my bakery and restaurant, raise worms, and feed them to the shrimp. Well, that never worked out very well, but I'm going to revisit that when I get things going.
Hmm.
But you should be able – you can raise a pound of shrimp with about 2.2 pounds of feed.
Sure.
So that's the economics of it are you buy the baby shrimp for 2 cents, and I've sold all of the shrimp that I've raised so far for $20 a pound, so that figures out to buy them for 2 cents, sell them for a dollar, 125 days later. So that's the economics of it.
Sure. Let's go to the phones right now before we go to Jeremiah Fredrickson, because these folks have been waiting patiently. As has Jeremiah, but here we go. Kathy and Spooner, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I am familiar with fish farming over the years, and I was just wondering, how do they deal with the effluent as well as over winter? How do they winter there?
Okay, so effluent, I imagine you're talking about the fish waste and what do you do with it?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Jeremiah, you want to take a stab at this?
Sure. I can take a stab at that.
How do you deal with the fish waste at Bullfrog Fish Farms?
You know, it's a neat system that we've got set up. All of our waste actually goes to, we've got a couple of resident pigs, and we feed them all the innards and heads and leftover skins and so forth. And when we're processing and when we have enough of it, that's all the pigs need.
Hmm.
We sometimes mix in a little bit of corn, but... Dave Sundahl, who's my operational manager, has said that in the past they've experimented and put both corn and fish parts out there, and the pigs will eat the fish parts first and just gobble it right up.
Well, I'm going to speak for Kathy here, but I assume that she's talking about the actual fish poop.
Fish poop. We clean the tanks just like you would clean your pool. And so going in with a pool cleaner and a scrub brush and, mm-hmm. and getting the sides of the tank and vacuuming that out, and that naturally filters back into the groundwater.
Okay. All right.
And if I could just speak to that just briefly.
Please do.
We're pumping water out of the ground to supply our tanks, which keeps our barns at a constant temperature and our water at a pretty constant temperature of about 50 degrees. So that's how we maintain during the winter. And our water is actually going into the ground cleaner than it's coming out of the ground. The DNR did a study on it a number of years back, and the water we're putting back in the ground is actually cleaner after the fish have filtered it.
Okay. All right. All right. And Chris Hartlib, that is one of the main concerns I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when people think fish farming, they imagine these net pens. They imagine a lot of fish waste going into lakes, rivers, and streams. Is that, would you say that's number one concern among people that people have about fish farming?
Well, I think people are concerned about pollution,
yeah.
Which is that effluent that's coming out. There are three types of fish farming in Wisconsin, in which there are tanks, there are ponds, and then there's kind of like flow-through streams. And in tank systems, that effluent is captured. And a lot of people, as the others are speaking about here, they then turn it into fertilizer. And there's lots of studies that show that if you compare fish fertilizer with horse, cows, chickens, pigs, fish is actually the best fertilizer that's out there.
Hmm.
So at least in our facilities that the university has, we practically give the stuff away. And our aquaculture facility is in Bayfield. And what I can tell you is that Bayfield High School has the greenest football field you've ever seen in the state. So
I like that. Fish yep. poop on the football field. That's wild. And we've got Beverly on the phone again. Beverly, what's on your mind for the second time?
Hi. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted you guys to know that I didn't hang up on you. It was a last call.
It was me who hung up on you. I thought you were done with your question. I'm sorry. What else?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's okay. Well, listen, thank you guys for having this, because we definitely will be looking up getting that trout and those shrimp.
All right. And you've both got websites, I imagine. Yeah. Just look it up online. All right, thanks for that, Beverly. So, Jeremiah, what I understand through some of the stories I saw in the newspaper that you are an agriculture teacher at a high school, is that correct?
Yep, I teach agriculture at Elk Mound.
What got you into the mindset that you need to be in to buy a fish farm?
I read an article in the Leader Telegram about Herbie looking to sell it, and it was kind of his last-ditch effort.
And we're talking about Herbie, what's his last name?
Herbie Radman.
Yeah, a character.
A character is a good way of putting it. He's well-known, he's a good storyteller, so I saw the article, I brought it home to my wife, I said, what do you think? And she said, oh, that'd be fun to take our son to. I said, no, what do you think if we actually talked about buying it? And that kind of started the process. And from there, we spent about a month and a half, 2 months doing some homework and researching and seeing if we could make a go of it, and decided to jump in with both feet. And that's where we're at today.
Sure. And so what was any part of the purchasing it difficult, and were there any concerns that you had? What were the main concerns that you had before you get into it, other than just the financials of it?
Well, as an ag teacher, I wasn't. I don't know a lot about fish, but I have taught aquaculture and aquaponics, and so I have a little bit of a background in that. And so that part of the knowledge wasn't so worrisome. It was kind of crunching the numbers on can we make a go of this as a business and be successful with it. And we're still trying to figure that out. And so that's been, one of our biggest challenges. And then just finding enough hours in the day, as I'm sure Mike can speak to, there's just not enough time. We've got all these ideas and potential that we see in our businesses, and it's just finding the time to do those.
But in terms of actually keeping these fish alive, healthy, growing, I mean, how much time does that take up? And I'll get back to you on that, Mike. Like, out of the day, are you out there feeding?
It's a lot like any other agriculture industry. You got to feed the fish, and feed most of our fish twice a day, morning and night. And then you got to take care of the tanks as far as cleaning them and that sort of thing. So you're looking at a good 5-6 hours per day just on care of the fish. That's mm-hmm. before any of the processing or moving or anything like that.
Sure, sure. And how often do you process, or do you plan to process?
Well, we operate Friday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have our outside fish pond that people come out and fish right now. Mm-hmm. And then we do also the processing of fresh and smoked fish for our regional areas. When we look at the processing for that, we're doing that a couple days a week and hopefully looking to grow that part of the business.
Oh, excellent. I've had the trout spread, by the way. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
One of our volunteers brings it to every holiday party we have at WPR here in Eau Claire.
Oh, that's great to hear.
So, Mike Hobley, how many hours of the day does it take to keep your shrimp happy? I mean, when you're not dealing with catastrophic situations like copper rust.
On an average day, probably less than an hour.
Really?
Yeah. So you weigh out the feed. We feed five times a day, and each feeding takes maybe 5 minutes.
Okay.
So all you do is throw the fish food into the pool. So if you're not harvesting, there's not a whole bunch of time consumption there. It depends on how you heat your pools. A lot of fish people do it electrically.
Sure.
And they heat just the water. I heat the air, and that heats the water, and do it with wood. I get all my wood free. I'm hooked up with a dumpster guy, and he brings me 30 or 40 yard dumpsters full of junk wood, and so I heat it that way, so I have no expense or very little expense there. So I have an outdoor wood boiler and that type of thing. So feeding the wood stove takes longer than feeding the fish, actually.
I would imagine.
So, but it's economical. I know of an outfit in Iowa that has 40 pools, and they spend like $5,000 a month on electric heating.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I don't have that expense, but it's very convenient. It's thermostatically controlled and everything.
Sure.
But water temperature is extremely important.
How sensitive are they to water temperature?
Well, they're not sensitive, but growth times are very temperature sensitive. So if you go from 85 degrees down to 80 degrees, you'll probably have a 20 to 30% decrease in growth rate.
Hmm.
So where I'm trying to keep my water warm, the trout people are trying to keep their water cold.
Right.
So it's kind of a, you know, so we each have our own problems, but you deal with that too.
Right. Well, that's part of being a farmer, I think.
Yeah. Well, and interestingly enough, in my barn, I have the heating unit on one end. The shrimp pools on the other end are about 1 or 2 degrees cooler.
Sure.
And the shrimp grow slower there. But it's not all bad because that spreads out my sales thing.
Okay.
So,
sure.
I haven't had a complete failure. I sold about $6,000 worth of shrimp last year.
Okay.
And, I will probably, I've thought of some other ways to sell it, restaurants that are serving mm-hmm. raw shrimp. You know, you have a couple of them here in Eau Claire, and they might be a market for that.
Very
if
cool.
you have not had farm-raised shrimp, you have not eaten shrimp. They are so much tastier than your store-bought made in China.
Okay.
Shrimp. Yeah.
Yeah, and because I was going to say, we'll get into that in a little bit. We'll talk about the differences and about local and about the care that goes into it versus what we're seeing coming from other countries in just a bit. Before we take our break, though, we've got a caller, Chris in Bloomer. Chris, what's
Hi,
on your mind?
Going?
Hey, thanks for calling. It's going well. What's on your mind?
I got a question. So the most important thing at farming is you do need a market to sell it to. Are most of the large commercial operations in Wisconsin, do they sell from farm to end user, or is there processors in between?
All right, good question. Chris Hartlib, well, let's go to Chris first, and then I'll ask these gentlemen. What's the model for that, for people to unload their products?
Well, the fish farmers in Wisconsin, I think, do just about everything. If they're located close enough to the bigger cities of Milwaukee, Chicago, and Minneapolis, they'll certainly work with the retailers there to sell it. But a lot of fish farms, I know Bullfrog's an example, you can just go right to the farm and purchase the fish right, you know, from farm to table. So I think they actually do the full spectrum. They'll market them anywhere and everywhere they can.
Sure. Mike Hobley, with your shrimp, is it you mentioned go to the bakery when they're available? And
okay, well, people come to the farm and I net them out of the pool and give them to them. I do not do any processing at this time. I'm not licensed or anything for that.
Sure.
At the farmer's market, I would harvest them in the morning and bring them to the market, and they'd buy them that way. So the processing is done by the individual. I have not gone into the processing part of it yet. Mm-hmm. But there are shrimp farmers in the country that do the processing, but I'm not there yet.
Okay. And we already got a little taste of a bullfrog, but so it's direct to seller?
We do direct to seller, but we also do processing on the farm also, and that's where we supply some of the grocery stores and restaurants in the Eau Claire and Menominee area.
And is that directly, or is that through some kind of a wholesaler?
No, it's directly from us. We deliver to the restaurants and so forth on Thursdays, and so that's when you get the freshest fish there, and we do all of the smoking and making our spreads on the farm.
All right. With that, let's take our final break here on the west side. We've got a lot more to talk about. We just really scratched the surface here. 1-800-228-5615. If you've got questions, we've had a lot of great calls about people's curiosity in the aquaculture industry here in western Wisconsin and the state as a whole. Chris Hartleb is a professor of biology at UW-Stevens Point. He directs the Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility near Bayfield. Jeremiah Fredrickson is the owner of Bullfrog Fish Farm and Eat My Fish near Menominee. And Mike Hobley is the owner of Bohemian Ocean Shrimp and Bohemian Ovens Bakery in Bloomer. 1-800-228-5615. If you have missed part of the program or want to listen again to this or any other show, go to WPR.org, click on the Shows tab towards the top right of the screen. That'll bring down a list of all of the statewide and regional shows. Find the West Side link, and you can listen to years' worth, nearly a decade's worth, of West Side's archives. We'll be back with more aquaculture discussion right after this.
Support for WPR comes from the UW Health Breast Center, offering second opinions for more than 4,000 Wisconsin women and men diagnosed with breast cancer each year. More at uwhealth.org. Second opinion.
Enrollment for fall semester classes at UW-Barron County is now open. Students can register online or in person at the campus in Rice Lake. Course descriptions and registration online at barron.uwc.edu/academics/courses.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about fish and shrimp in the heart of Dairyland. Aquaculture is definitely an industry in Wisconsin. Some say that we're seeing some growth in the aquaculture industry. Here in western Wisconsin, we run the gamut. We've got fish farms, we've got Atlantic salmon, we've got trout, we've got shrimp. Joining me for this discussion today is Mike Hobley. He's the owner of Bohemian Ocean Shrimp and Bohemian Ovens in Bloomer. Jeremiah Fredrickson is the owner of Bullfrog Fish Farm and Eat My Fish near Menominee. And I should mention that these gentlemen aren't the sole owners. They are in cahoots with their significant others. Chris Hartleb is a professor of biology at UW-Stevens Point. And he is also the director of the university's Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility near Bayfield. I didn't want to get anybody in trouble, so I mentioned that. We've had a lot of great questions coming in, and we've got another one coming right now. But I wanted to talk about regulations real quick, and I'll go to Chris Hartleb. So you and I have already spoken about this for the story that I put together for WPR News, but a bill authored by Republican State Senator Tom Tiffany was signed into law by Governor Walker at the end of June. And the bill basically, in Tiffany's words, eased regulatory burdens and some of the cost for the aquaculture industry in the state. It officially listed aquaculture as a form of agriculture, which you mentioned earlier, Chris, and also made some exemptions to some wetland protections for wetlands that are created for fish farming. Tiffany said that the the costs for fish farming in Wisconsin due to regulations were more than twice that of any other state. So is he right on that, or was that an exaggeration on his part?
No, actually, he was right on that. You know, as we already mentioned, Wisconsin was kind of, an oddity in that, aquaculture or fish farming was not considered a part of agriculture, even though it's farming. So this bill basically clears up some of that language and puts aquaculture in that agriculture industry. And, some of the areas that bill covered was that, as you mentioned, fish farmers, when they have to deal with that effluent, they'll often build an artificial wetland.
Mm-hmm.
And yet once they built the wetland, they were not allowed to discharge into it. So this kind of clears it up and says, look, if you build a wetland, then you can use it as part of your effluent treatment.
Okay.
Another one is that fish farmers were only allowed to farm fish in what they call freeze-out ponds. In other words, they have to freeze to the bottom in the winter. Well, it's really hard to grow a fish popsicle that's frozen all the way down to the bottom. So this allows them to farm in ponds that don't freeze all the way. So you can kind of look at some of these. One of the big key factors that people have asked me about is that it did not change any environmental control or regulation over the industry. People started calling it the right to pollute bill.
Sure.
And that's just it's very false. It keeps all the guidelines and restrictions in place. It just makes it so that it makes sense and clarifies things for the aquaculture industry.
The group, it's a group of attorneys, Midwest environmental advocates. They're usually on the front lines of anything that they consider damaging to the environment. So they called Tiffany's bill a giveaway of Wisconsin's water resources to the aquaculture industry. And they were – one of the things they mentioned to me is that aquaculture is very different than agriculture, so it should be treated a little differently. And also, they're concerned about the fish farms maybe taking water, too much water from a natural river, diverting it into their raceways, and also – of course, concerned about the wastes. So are those concerns justified, or are those part of some kind of misconception about the industry?
I think it probably fits the misconception, because 2 years ago there was a different aquaculture bill that tried to go through the state legislature, and it did not even make it to the floor. And there, I think, is what they were kind of looking at, in which it was loosening the regulations on how much water that aquaculture could use. But this new bill, the one that, as you just mentioned, just actually was signed into law at the end of June,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't release any of those regulations. So the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources still regulate aquaculture. You still have to get permits. But like I said, it kind of clarifies those permits and relates them to aquaculture. Before that, aquaculture was just treated as anybody else that uses water. Now it actually treats it more as a farm.
Okay. And do you think that this change in regulation will lead to – Tom Tiffany was basically excited and hopeful that this would spur some kind of a growth in the industry, because he said we've got the water resources to have a thriving aquaculture industry. There's no reason we should be ninth. We should be higher up the list. Do you think that could happen with this legislation?
Well, that some of the early predictions showed that, once it's labeled now as agriculture, that opens up access to agriculture loans or grants for a lot of these farms. So the number that they were predicting is that without having such strict regulations that really put aquaculture off in a world by its own, not part of agriculture, that was slowing the industry's growth. Now that things have been cleared up, the estimate is that the production of farm-raised fish in Wisconsin will double over the next 5 years.
Well, that'll be interesting to see. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Landon, who's calling from Madison. I suspect that either he's listening online or he's on the road, but either way, Landon, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I had a question about the use of beneficial microbes or probiotics in aquaculture. Wondering if any of your guests are familiar with those products or see any benefits in using them to reduce waste buildup or improve water quality for the benefit of fish health or improve yield.
All right. Thanks, Landon. Mike Hobley, I think you were talking about that. Isn't that what BioFlock is the microbes?
Yes. When I restarted my pools here in the last few months, I add microbes to it, denitrifying bacteria.
So bacteria that'll eat the nitrogen.
Yeah. Every living organism gives off ammonia when it digests its food, and that's true with the shrimp. And so they have ammonia in the water, and so you have to have bacteria that convert the ammonia to nitrites, and then other bacteria that convert it to nitrates.
Right.
And then other bacteria that turn the nitrates back into protein, which the shrimp can eat. So it's a cycle. But I seed those pools with I bought a gallon of these denitrifying bacteria, $300 for a gallon of bacteria.
Wow.
That you can't even see, you know. And then I have some other bacteria that I add that are supposed to be beneficial as far as disease control. So in the business that I'm in, bacteria are paramount. I not only feed the shrimp, but I each day feed the bacteria sugar. That's one of the things that I got into trouble with the first time around. I fed them molasses. Yeah. Most of the shrimp farmers feed molasses to the bacteria, the beneficial bacteria. But I discovered that the molasses I was using had a high zinc content and was probably contributing to my death losses. So
oh, wow.
I switched to just sugar now. You can use a lot of different things, but the bacteria have to get extra carbohydrates to process the thing. So
wow.
Probiotics and bacteria are a central point of shrimp raising indoors.
Now, I'm going to probably make a fool of myself and compare. It sounds kind of like setting up a fish tank. Because
yeah.
when you get a fish tank, if you don't get that bacteria, I learned I lost a lot of fish because there was too much nothing to eat the nitrate or nitrates.
Nitrates and the ammonia. So you have to, they will naturally form, but it takes a long time. And
like a month.
So when you're starting out the shrimp pools, if you have you have ammonia immediately, but you don't have the bacteria until 90 days to 120 days into the process. So you seed it so that you get out ahead of it. And once you have your pools with the bacteria in it and you do the next batch, the bacteria are there, so you don't have to do it a second time. And as far as I didn't tell you about the waste products, but there really are not very much waste products involved in this. Maybe a 5-gallon pail in a pool, and we clean that out between batches, and that goes on my garden. So it's excellent fertilizer, very high in nitrogen.
Right.
So it's not a problem.
So just 5 gallons out of 30-some thousand, that's insane.
Well, in one pool, three or 4,000 shrimp.
Okay. We could probably take one more call if you want to dial in with your questions or comments, 1-800-228-5615. With the time remaining, though, I want to ask Chris Hartlib. You know, we talked a little bit about the misconceptions. I think one of the misconceptions about fish farming is that it's all the same. You know, when people see these news reports, and this goes for me too, because I just assumed that fish farms were these big, massive, you know, things that we see on the news. But I've been told, and I've been reading more about it, about what happens in the U.S. versus in countries like Malaysia or, you know, China or wherever, that it's very different. So how do you explain to people the differences between fish farming in the U.S. versus what comes from overseas?
Well, fish farming in the U.S., well, like a lot of things, is highly regulated. Both the EPA, the FDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture all have various guidelines or permits or rules that you have to follow. So I agree. I get called by people often and they say, well, what about those U.S. mega fish farms that use antibiotics and other pharmaceuticals? Plainly, that just doesn't exist in the U.S. What they're talking about are foreign farms. That basically are supersized. They dump in antibiotics or other pharmaceuticals prophylactically to prevent disease. And in the U.S., we're just not allowed to do that. So U.S. farm-raised fish are some of the healthiest fish that you can find in the world.
And in fact, you know, we're talking about how much seafood the U.S. imports. We're also a significant exporter of seafood because foreign countries, especially the upper class of foreign countries, want to buy the safest seafood that's out there, and they'll buy U.S. farm-raised fish. So it's kind of an oddity how much we import, and yet we're exporting a lot of the good fish to other countries because that's the only type that they'll actually eat.
How big? I'm sorry to interrupt. You can finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, people say to me, what's the best or safest seafood to eat? I would say U.S. farm-raised fish are the safest seafood that you can actually buy as a consumer.
How big a threat to the U.S. fish farming or aquaculture industry is the overseas market, the imports coming from countries like China, elsewhere? As far as, you know, because I think that as far as catfish production, it has dropped a little bit. And I thought I was looking at some numbers overall with fish production from the U.S., and it didn't appear to be growing. It appeared to almost be on the decline. And maybe I was looking at something incorrect, but what kind of a threat is the foreign supply to the U.S. fish producers?
Sure. And an example we've been talking about, and I think it probably influences the numbers you were reading, the U.S.'s largest producer of fish were the catfish farmers of the South. About 10 years ago, the Asian market said that they were going to start producing catfish. And what they did was is they produced them in the millions of pounds annually, and they flooded the U.S. market with it. And the U.S. catfish industry is about a third of the size that it was just 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And since that was our largest fish farming industry, when you lose two-thirds of it, it definitely shrinks the numbers in terms of production in the U.S.
And
so both, you know, flooding the market as well as the healthiness of the seafood as well. They're flooding the U.S. with seafood that basically is partially contaminated. And so it's best to eat U.S. seafood.
We haven't even gotten into country of origin labeling, but we are out of time. Mike Hobley, you wanted to jump in and say something?
They pollute the ocean with the shrimp farming and a lot of it's done with slave labor too.
Well, there have been reports about that from the Associated Press. That was unbelievable. Well, I wish we had more time for the discussion, but gentlemen, thank you so much. Chris Hartlib is a professor of biology at UW Stevens Point. He is also the director of the university's Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility. Thank you. Jeremiah Fredrickson is the new owner of the Bullfrog Fish Farm, co-owner near Menominee, and Eat My Fish. Mike Hobley is the co-owner of Bohemian Ocean Shrimp and Bohemian Ovens and Bloomer. Thanks to them, thanks to Team Westside, including our intrepid intern Abby Ivory Gagne, who produced the show, Mort Cypress, who handled on-air production, Ben Smethers, who handled promotions for the program, and Kate Springer and Dean Kallenbeck for keeping the train on the tracks. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.